Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
The first time someone told her they had seen her somewhere she had not been, she did not think much of it. She was a senior in college and worked several evenings a week at the campus library, mostly at the circulation desk. By then, she knew the building well enough to move through it almost without thinking. The first floor held the main desk, computer stations, and newer books, while the upper levels became progressively quieter with long rows of older stacks, study rooms, and offices tucked along the walls. One afternoon, a coworker came downstairs and asked why she had ignored him on the third floor. She laughed and told him she had been at the desk for nearly an hour. He looked confused for a moment, then shrugged it off. He had only seen the woman from behind as she turned between two rows of books, and they decided another student must have looked like her. That seemed completely reasonable. It was a large university with thousands of students moving through campus every day. People resembled one another, especially from a distance. A few days later, it happened again. A friend stopped her after class and mentioned seeing her crossing the quad earlier that morning. She had waved, but the woman had continued walking without acknowledging her. The problem was that she had been sitting in a lecture hall on the other side of campus at the time. Her friend was certain enough that she described the coat the woman had been wearing, a dark wool coat similar to one she owned. Even then, neither of them found the coincidence particularly strange. Her friend joked that she apparently had a double somewhere on campus, and for the next several days they watched for her whenever they were outside. The idea became something of a running joke. Whenever someone failed to answer a message or showed up late, friends blamed her mysterious twin. She began wondering whether she might eventually meet the woman herself and discover that the resemblance was not nearly as strong as everyone claimed. For several weeks, nothing else happened. Then a professor stopped her outside the library one evening and asked whether she was feeling better. She had no idea what he meant. She explained that he had passed her near the student center earlier that afternoon. She had been standing alone near the steps and looked upset. He had said hello, but she only stared at him before walking away. She had spent that entire afternoon working in the library. This time, the story bothered her a little more. The professor had not merely glimpsed someone from behind. He had been close enough to believe he saw her face, and he knew her well enough to recognize her outside class. She asked what the woman had been wearing. He described the sweater and jeans she had on at that moment. She laughed when he said it, although the coincidence left her unsettled. The clothing itself was ordinary, and half the campus seemed to own some version of the same outfit. Still, it was strange enough that she mentioned it to one of her co-workers later that night. He immediately reminded her about the woman he had seen upstairs. Another employee overheard the conversation and said she had seen someone who looked like her near the elevators a few nights earlier. She had assumed the woman was heading downstairs and had called after her about a book return. The woman entered the elevator without answering. When the employee reached the doors a few seconds later, the elevator was still sitting on the same floor. No one was inside. They spent the next few minutes trying to explain that one. Perhaps the woman had stepped out through the opposite doors, although the elevator did not have another exit. Maybe the employee had confused which elevator she entered, or the doors had opened and closed while she was looking away. By the end of the conversation, they had convinced themselves there was still a reasonable explanation. She wanted there to be. The sightings became more frequent as the semester continued. A classmate claimed she had passed her near the science building late one evening. Another student said she had seen her sitting alone at a table on the second floor of the library, even though she had been downstairs checking books in at the time. Twice, co-workers mentioned seeing her disappear into the older stacks and then seemed surprised when they found her at the circulation desk moments later. She began asking more questions whenever someone reported seeing the other woman. Was she close? Did she actually see her face? What was she wearing? The answers varied, but one detail remained surprisingly consistent. The woman never seemed to acknowledge anyone. She did not wave back, answer when someone called her name, or stop when approached. She simply continued walking, or disappeared around a corner. That helped preserve the look-alike explanation. Perhaps the other student was tired of being mistaken for someone she did not know and had decided to ignore anyone who called after her. Still, the sightings had begun to make her self-conscious. She found herself scanning crowds between classes and checking reflections in windows as she crossed campus. Whenever she entered the library for an evening shift, she looked toward the upper floors and wondered whether someone resembling her was already somewhere inside. One night, shortly before closing, the co-worker who had first seen the double came downstairs looking irritated. He had been shelving books on the third floor when he saw her walking ahead of him near the older stacks. He called her name because he needed help locating a cart that had been moved earlier. She had not answered. He followed her around the end of the shelves, calling again, and watched her turn into another aisle. When he reached it, no one was there. There were no side doors, no stairwell, and nowhere she could have gone without passing him. He came downstairs expecting to find that she had somehow returned to the desk ahead of him. She had never left. For the first time, neither of them joked about the mysterious twin. She asked him exactly what he had seen, and he described her hair, her build, and the dark sweater she had worn to work that evening. He had been close enough, he said, that there was no possibility he had mistaken someone else for her. He had not seen her face. That was the only detail that allowed her to hold on to the explanation she had been using for weeks. Somewhere on campus, there was another woman who happened to look remarkably like her. There had to be. But for the rest of the night, every time the elevator opened or footsteps sounded from the upper floors, she looked up from the circulation desk, and for the first time, she was no longer hoping to meet her. For the next week, nothing happened. She still watched the elevators and looked toward the stairwell whenever someone came down from the upper floors, but no one mentioned seeing her anywhere she had not been. By the end of the week, she had started convincing herself that the entire thing had grown larger, simply because everyone was talking about it. Then a friend thanked her for something she had never done. They were leaving class together when the friend mentioned appreciating the notes she had dropped off the night before. She explained that she had been studying in one of the library's second-floor rooms when she saw her standing outside the glass door. The woman handed her several pages from class, then walked away before she had much chance to say anything. She had never been on the second floor that evening. She had been working downstairs. Her friend insisted it had been her. This was not someone seen across a courtyard or disappearing between shelves. They had stood only a few feet apart. When she asked what the woman had said, her friend admitted she had said nothing at all. That detail bothered her more than the rest. The other version of her still did not speak, even when someone was close enough to interact with it. The notes were photocopies from their class, nothing handwritten, and nothing that could be traced back to her. Her friend had simply assumed they came from her because she was the one who delivered them. They tried to make sense of it, but eventually returned to the same explanation she had been using all semester. Somewhere on campus was a woman who looked extraordinarily similar to her. That night, however, she found herself studying everyone who entered the library. She wanted to see the woman now, if only to end the uncertainty. The sighting finally happened several nights later. It was less than an hour before closing, and the library had thinned out considerably. A co-worker asked her to check the third floor for books left in the study areas while he finished at the desk. A few students remained near the windows, but the older stacks toward the back were almost empty. She had nearly finished when she noticed someone at the far end of an aisle. The woman stood with her back toward her, wearing the same dark sweater she had on that evening. She had the same length hair, the same general build, and the same canvas bag hanging from one shoulder. Even the way she stood seemed familiar. For several seconds, she did not move. Her first thought was almost a relief. This had to be the student everyone kept mistaking for her. She stepped into the aisle, and the woman began walking away. When she called out, the figure stopped. Every part of her wanted the woman to turn around and reveal a stranger who merely looked similar from behind. Instead, she slowly turned. The distance between them was no more than 20 feet. There was nothing distorted or obviously unnatural about the face. It was simply hers. The same eyes, the same mouth, the same hair falling forward near one cheek. The expression was the only thing that seemed wrong. It was not frightening or angry, just empty in a way her own face would never naturally be. Neither moved for several seconds. She could hear the ventilation system above the shelves and the faint movement of students elsewhere on the floor, ordinary sounds that made what she was seeing feel even more impossible. Then a student stepped between the shelves carrying an armful of books. The interruption lasted only a moment, but when the aisle was visible again, the woman was gone. She hurried to the far end and checked the surrounding rows. There was no sound of anyone running and no nearby door through which the woman could have disappeared. By the time she returned downstairs, her hands were shaking. Her co-worker immediately asked what had happened. She told him she had finally seen the woman. He asked whether it was someone who resembled her. It was not. It had been her. From that point on, the sightings became harder to ignore. A classmate saw her standing outside an evening lecture, staring through the narrow window in the door, even though she was nowhere near the building. Another co-worker saw her inside a locked study room on the fourth floor. By the time he returned with the key, the room was empty. Then came the incident that bothered her most. The library closed at midnight during the week. One evening, she and another employee stayed late finishing paperwork after the last students left. Shortly after midnight, he went downstairs to check the entrance while she remained on the second floor. When he returned, he asked why she had gone outside. She had not. He had watched her walk through the lobby and leave through the front doors while she was still upstairs. They reviewed the security footage together. The lobby camera showed a woman approaching the exit just after midnight. Her height, clothing, and hair matched perfectly, and she carried the same canvas bag the real woman had brought to work that night. Her face was never clearly visible. As she reached the doors, the image briefly froze. When the video resumed, the entrance was empty. She went home that night more frightened than she had been after seeing the double in the stacks. Until then, it had appeared inside buildings or somewhere across campus. Now it had walked out of the library wearing her clothes and carrying her bag, looking enough like her that a co-worker who knew her well had watched it leave without questioning what he saw. For the first time, she began to wonder whether it was still simply copying her or whether it was becoming better at being her. After the security footage, she stopped treating the sightings as something she could eventually explain away. For several days, she considered quitting the library job. The idea of working late in a building where something wearing her face seemed to appear without warning had become difficult to ignore, especially now that the double seemed capable of moving through the library while she was somewhere else inside it. But graduation was only a few months away, and she needed the job. More importantly, she did not want fear to dictate the rest of her semester. She began avoiding the upper floors alone after dark and made sure co-workers knew where she was whenever she left the circulation desk. The sightings continued, although less frequently. A student mentioned seeing her near the campus bookstore one afternoon while she was in class. Another co-worker thought she had passed him on the second floor, but discovered her downstairs moments later. Each report unsettled her, but none involved another direct encounter. She started reading about doppelgangers, although she quickly regretted it. The stories ranged from doubles appearing before illness or death to unexplained copies of living people seen by friends and family. Some traditions treated them as warnings, while others described them as something more sinister. None matched what was happening closely enough to help, and after a few nights of making herself more anxious, she stopped researching. What bothered her most was that the double had never spoken. It could apparently walk through buildings, carry things, and even hand papers to someone, yet no one had ever heard its voice. Whenever anyone tried to speak to it, it either ignored them or disappeared. She found herself wondering whether it could speak at all. As the semester moved toward finals, the campus became busier during the day and strangely empty late at night. Students stayed in the library longer, studying until closing, and she often worked past midnight helping clear the building and finish the end-of-night paperwork. One evening, a few weeks before graduation, she stayed after closing with another employee. They finished their work shortly after midnight, and her co-worker left through a side staff entrance while she remained in the lobby waiting for a friend who had offered to drive her home. The library was locked, and without students moving through the floors above, the building felt different. Every small sound seemed amplified. She sat near the circulation desk with her coat and bag beside her, watching the occasional car pass beyond the glass entrance. She was checking the time when movement outside caught her attention. At first, she assumed it was her friend. Then the person stepped into the light. The woman outside was her. Not someone similar, not a stranger, with the same coat or hairstyle viewed from a distance. It was her face. The double stood perhaps 15 feet away on the other side of the locked glass doors, wearing the same jeans and dark coat she had on inside the library. The familiar canvas bag hung from one shoulder. For several seconds, neither of them moved. Seeing it through the glass was somehow worse than seeing it among the stacks. There was no distance or poor lighting to soften the resemblance. She could see the shape of her own face clearly enough to know that every feature matched. The expression was the same one she remembered from the third floor. It was not angry or threatening, just empty in a way that made the resemblance feel unnatural. She did not approach the doors, and the double did not move toward them either. She wondered later how long they stood looking at one another. It may have been only 10 or 15 seconds, although it felt much longer. She wanted to reach for her phone, but some instinct told her not to take her eyes off the figure. Eventually, the double turned and walked away from the library at an ordinary pace, crossing the dark campus until it passed beyond the exterior lights and disappeared between two buildings. She never considered following it. Her friend arrived several minutes later and found her still standing near the doors. She told him only that she had seen something outside and wanted to leave. That was the last time she ever saw the double, and more surprisingly, the report stopped as well. No one mentioned seeing her in the wrong place again. Co-workers stopped encountering her on floors where she was not working, and friends no longer waved at someone across campus who refused to acknowledge them. She graduated that spring and moved away a few months later. For years afterward, she occasionally wondered whether another student really had resembled her enough to account for some of the early sightings. On a crowded campus, mistaken identity was hardly unusual. Perhaps those first reports had been coincidences that made everything afterward seem connected. But that explanation could not account for the woman in the library aisle, the security footage, or the night she stood inside a locked building and looked through the glass doors at her own face, staring back. What disturbed her most was never knowing what the double wanted. It had spent months appearing to other people before finally allowing her to see it. Then, after that last encounter, it simply stopped. Sometimes she still thinks about all the people who saw her around campus before she knew anything unusual was happening, and she wonders how long the other version of her had been there before anyone noticed.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.